Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at a coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Getting together to talk about all the things we used to do. The laughs, the passions, the little Sebastians, the pets with belly too. And we're putting it all in a podcast, then we'll send it up into the sky. We're calling it Pods and Recollection. Come on, little podcast, spread your wings and fly.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Parks and Recollection, where we go to Pawnee and see everybody and do our thing and examine them like aliens who abduct people one episode at a time. Is that what we do? I think it is.
It's close enough. We get the gist.
It's close enough.
That's a paraphrase. It's a paraphrase. It doesn't have to be word perfect.
No. This is a good episode, though. We have they're all good, but this is one people talk
this
about.
This is a classic. It's season two classic.
Do you think this is the first classic?
That's a good question. I'm biased. So this is episode 8 of season 2. I'd have to look at the rundown, but I think there's classics, and then there's what we would sometimes say in the minor in the writer's room, maybe damning with faint praise, minor classics. Minor classics. This one's a straight up classic. This one's a straight up classic.
This is straight up classic. This is Ron and Tammy. That's what we're doing today. And for sure, I think this would be on every Parks and Rec fan's. It's got to be in their top 10 for sure.
So much to talk about, right? Because it's sort of an iconic character. But this is one of those episodes where you step outside what you know about that character. And of course, we're talking about Ron Swanson. Should we get into the details of this episode?
Remind the folks what happens.
I will. So this is episode 8 of season 2. It first aired November 5th, 2009. So almost exactly 12 years ago. Written by the man, the legend, Mike Scully. Used to be the showrunner of The Simpsons and directed by Troy Miller. Fantastic episode. Shall we do the synopsis, Rob?
Yeah, I will let you take it away because nobody brings it home quite like you do.
All right, here we go. A lot to get through in this one because it's such a legendary episode. The episode opens with Andy taking over disgruntled old Gus's shoeshine business in the city hall. It's the cold open. Later, Mark breaks the bad news to Leslie that the Pawnee Library has placed a planning claim for Lot 48. Leslie and the rest of the Parks Department express their disdain for the library, much to the confusion of Anne, while Ron is particularly angry to learn that his ex-wife Tammy, who he insists is evil incarnate, is the new library director. Leslie decides to look evil in the eye and confront Tammy directly about the library's planning claim, but to her surprise, Leslie finds Tammy to be warm and friendly. Tammy instantly agrees to rescind her planning claim on Lot 48 as a professional courtesy between government gals, her and Leslie. Leslie, now convinced that Tammy is not as bad as Ron claims, brings Tammy to the Parks Department so that she and Ron can work out their differences. Tammy and an agitated Ron go to a local diner to have lunch. Legendary scene. The two sit down amicably, but soon erupt into a loud argument over who set the bed on fire, which jump cuts to them sitting back to back in separate booths eating, then cuts to the two making out between the two booths, then on the table, which Ron pulls out from the wall, then running out to their car and driving to a local motel where they strip off their clothes and they run into the hotel room. Meanwhile, Mark enlists Tom's help in dealing with Andy, who's working hard to try to win back Anne. Taking Tom's advice to take the high road, Mark confronts Andy at the shoeshine stand, only to find Andy has covered the wall above his stand with pictures of Anne. Finding ads posted with Andy and Anne's shoeshine, Anne tells Andy to back off and take down the Anne shrine he's erected. Later, a cheery Ron waltzes into the Parks Department, providing way too many details about his sexual exploits with Tammy. An uncomfortable Leslie listens and realizes that Tammy is using sex to manipulate Ron into giving the library control of Lot 48. Leslie confronts Tammy, who smirks and tells Leslie that she'd rather be a Cleopatra than an Eleanor Roosevelt. Really seminal talking head describing Leslie's character. Leslie tries to get Ron to break up with Tammy, but he insists he's powerless to her wiles and convinces Leslie to go with him to do the deed. The two go to the library, and Ron immediately caves when Tammy flirts with him. Leslie gives up, telling Ron he should do whatever will make him happy. Impressed that a woman put his needs before her own, Ron decides to break up with Tammy and give the lot back to Leslie. After breaking the news to Tammy off camera, Ron flees the library with half his mustache missing and a pushpin stuck in his forehead. The two share a drink back at the Parks Department and agree that Tammy and the library really are the two worst things in the world. And that's the story of Ron and Tammy. So this is the first time we see Ron kind of go batshit crazy. like this is all escalated in later seasons. But I think it was fun to kind of see you know, Nick Offerman and his real life wife, Megan Mullally, together in this episode.
Was there ever any thought that Ron Swanson's ex-wife would not be Nick Offerman's actual wife, or was it designed for Megan?
I think it was designed for Megan. Greg, correct me if I'm wrong, but yeah, it I think that, Nick and Megan love acting together. They're always in stuff together. They're one of the most loving couples I've ever seen, and they're both fucking phenomenal comedic actors. And so they often come as a package deal. So I think Nick has appeared on Megan's stuff, and Megan has appeared in Nick's stuff, and they're in movies together. And but yeah, I think very early on, again, like I said, this is one of those episodes where you take an iconic character like Ron Swanson. And you know everything you think you know about him, right? You have all these facts you know about him. And then every so often, an episode like this enhances the character because it shows him step outside who he usually is. And so, yeah, I mean, it's so interesting. I think one of the reasons Nick got cast in the show is because he had these smaller parts in previous things that Megan had acted in, and Mike had remembered those parts. You know,
they are amazing together. And you know, Megan, of course, brings her 75 Emmy wins for Will and Grace. I think she won 75 Emmys. She won.
Yeah,
that's the amount.
That might be an undercount.
Yeah, I think it is. It's a little. I rounded it up or down, as it were. There's a lot in this episode that makes me laugh. I mean, it just starts off great with old Gus. It's just such great casting. The notion of old Gus, and he's actually old and belligerent and kind of nasty, is super, super funny. And Andy, I love Andy laughing at the nasty old man tirade he goes on while he's being awarded.
Yeah, it's always, I think that was a play on, I think, in the writers when we were talking about, yeah, you always do these speeches and, you know, these beloved figures, you're so reverential. And then what if in that ceremony, the guy was just a huge dickhead and just tore everyone a new one? And then, yeah, cutting to Andy laughing, like that's a very funny old cold open.
I also love that the worst thing in the world are libraries.
Yes.
It's just a funny, really, really funny concept, especially for Leslie Knope, who's so like learned and loves book. You know, she was a pleasure to have in class.
Yeah.
Like, so the notion that she hates libraries is too funny to me.
It was absolutely, you know, and I think one of the inspirations behind that, and it's such a strange sort of choice, but so I think, you know, Mike Schur, one of his favorite shows is Cheers. And Cheers had, this sort of running joke on that show of who their rival was. And they had a rival bar called Gary's Old Town Tavern. And so at one point, Mike was like, well, the Parks Department should have a rival department.
Mm.
And so it kind of manifested twice. It manifested first in the rivalry between the Parks Department and the library. And then later on, we did an even bigger version, which was between Pawnee and Eagleton. It was like, okay, there's so many rivals. I mean, look, you're doing 125 episodes. You're going to do a lot of rivalries. So that was kind of a secondary thing. And we brought the library back again and again, and it was kind of fun. So this is one of, the earliest, maybe the first library episode. Because you see Anne being like, what the fuck is going on between parks and libraries?
There's so many great Ron and Tammy moments, but my favorite in this, and it happens in Ron and Tammy 2, which we'll get to when we get to that, which is, I love that episode as well, but that Ron consents when she's nearby.
Yeah.
Like he's an animal.
She's here. He's like that smell Offerman voice. She's here. Like that, that which here. Is unbelievable. Also, like you, when actors do that kind of stuff, you can build off like their reads. Like that, that was something he kind of did and performed that way. And so in later episodes, we would do that again and again. And it's just like, oh, this is just a really funny thing. It made us laugh so much in the edit. And one of the great things about Megan is she's just, you know, Mike approached her to do this role. And it's obviously a crazily villainous character. And she was like, yeah, I'll do it. Sounds great. Like, do you want me to play someone completely terrible and awful and, you know, essentially a villain? And she was really excited about the script and especially all the dialogue of Ron talking about Tammy. And it was like, yeah, I love all that stuff. I mean, how fun is it to see your husband, you know, describe you in this way? And so some of this stuff was improvised. A lot of that on-screen fight thing. So that diner scene is kind of this epic scene. And one of the craziest parts was as they're fighting and kissing, Offerman pulls the table out of the wall, and that wasn't scripted. So that was just like, it just happened. I mean, that's the upside, by the way, of casting your real life wife is that, it's probably not cool to do that with a random stranger you just met. So I think they could go a little farther, and that their improvs could go a little farther. And then it's like, yeah, I just met this woman. Her name is Jessica, and I'm going to do this crazy shit with her. In this case, yeah, you can probably push it a little bit farther. And they did. I mean, those scenes are amazing.
And Nick is a strong man.
He's a
bear. Proves that.
He's a bear. He's a fire hydrant, man. That guy's a thick
he's
dude.
A bear.
He's a bear.
He's an actual bear.
I've punched him in the chest before. He's a solid. He's made of oak, that guy.
He truly is. The thing about Megan and the thing about Nick is they're fearless as performers.
Yeah.
They don't give, excuse me, a fuck. They just go for it, you know? And that's It's. I always say when people ask what the key to comedy is, and I always say that the great ones have no, you know, governor on themselves in terms of how they're perceived, and they just are willing to go for it. I mean, you look back to like Lucille Ball, who was a gorgeous, you know, ingenue, but her special sauce was she did not care that she looked like a fool.
Yeah.
And that's what made her beloved.
Yeah, and it's
Lucy.
That thing
and
that
all the great comedians have that.
It's that thing I've heard you say before too, where it's like, you know, you can't have vanity, right? It's like you can't have vanity. I think you talked about with Pratt when he was on. You know, it's like, yeah, you got to be open to looking silly. It doesn't matter if you're a good-looking guy, or, you know, an attractive woman. Like, you know, you just throw vanity out the window and just go crazy. And you know, that was, by the way, besides the table getting pulled out of the wall, there's a scene later when they run into the motel room where Megan rips off her shirt, essentially. And that was improvised because we would never tell her to do that. You know, that wasn't in the script. This is a TV PG show on NBC, network television. And she said, there's this quote that we dug up that she said later. She pulled off her top and she said, yeah, I didn't care. It was 6 a.m. Who cares? I didn't know when I went on the crew. Like, I'm just ripping my shirt off. And that's the thing you got to think about when we're filming these scenes. Like, you look at the scene and it's Nick and Megan going crazy. It's Ron and Tammy, like, making out and all this stuff. It may very well be Monday morning at 6:23 a.m. Like that's when we're shooting a lot of this stuff to make use of daylight. Like you're literally shooting at 7 a.m. or whatever.
There are certain moments where you go, yep, I'm really in show business. That would be one of them.
Yeah.
When you're like, you know, holding the boom on the crew, recording the sound, and it's 6 a.m. and Megan Mullally is taking her shirt off.
Yeah.
And it's not in the script.
And you're like, that's comedy. That's comedy. Yeah, exactly. You're just trying to keep the boom out of frame. you're probably laughing, by the way, because we've been doing this. You know, I'm shooting a comedy right now. It's like, yeah, I've seen people laughing and trying to do their jobs because someone's improvising or doing something unexpected. And you're supposed to hold the camera still or hold the microphone still. But I see them
struggling.
Yeah. So that's the fun thing about comedy, right? That's the fun thing about comedy.
Yeah, there's nothing better than seeing, you know, people who literally like take their eyes off of the viewfinder and the camera because they're laughing or whatever. It's like, you're like, yep, yeah. This is why we do it.
Yeah, yeah.
What was it? Was it always going to be a thing to make that relationship hypersexualized? Because, you know, it's funny. Parks and Rec is probably the least sexual show ever.
Yes.
That ran as long as it did. I mean, it is an extremely, I would argue, prude.
Yes,
show.
It's sweet and gentle. It's sweet and gentle and family oriented. But yeah, it's like, you know, if you look at like the Leslie and Ben relationship, like, yeah, they're holding hands. It's like, it's not. But I think that's why this works, right? We were watching this episode the other night and my girlfriend was watching. She's like, this episode is weird. I think she was not expecting to see this kind of stuff, but I think that's partly why it works, and that's partly, it all adds to the lore of Ron Swanson. It's that thing where the exception proves the rule. And so, yeah, for 99, or I would say 122 out of the 125 Parks episodes, you know, people don't even really kiss. And then in these three, it's extremely dirty in some ways, which is like, you know, I think one of the reasons the episode stands out.
Is this the first time that that we realize that Ron wears Tiger Woods red and black Sunday championship look when he's had sex?
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Jim, question for you. How is your social battery right now? You drained? Are you bursting with energy? How you doing?
My battery, Greg, thank you for asking, is pretty full. It's because I've learned over the years, sometimes you got to get help, and I am not afraid to do that.
It can be easy to ignore our social battery and spread ourselves thin, especially with social gatherings picking up after the winter. So it's important to figure out what the right amount of socializing for you is and the best way to recharge. Maybe you thrive around people, or maybe you need some more alone time. Well, therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery.
Yeah, so if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It can be a lifesaver. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge, because, you know, sometimes the first match isn't always the best match.
So find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/parks today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/parks. Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Plus, you can choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, which is awesome, and more than 60 add-ons every week.
The last Factor meal I had was a pork chop. Oh, here's the thing about pork chops. I want it tender, I want it juicy, and that is what Factor gave me. Honest to God, it was amazing, and all I had to do was peel off the top and pop it in the oven a couple of minutes, and the smell hits you before you ever taste it. It fills the entire kitchen, and then you peel and you eat, and it is so good.
Head to factormeals.com/parksandrex50 and use code parksandrex50 to get 50% off your first month, plus 20% off your next month. That's code parksandrex50 at factormeals.com/parksandrex50. 50% off your first box, plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
There's a lot of great work by Megan, but my favorite thing she does in this episode for sure is, and I love the little things with actors. I always, one would hope any good actor can land a joke. So I'm not, to me, those should be the givens. I'm looking for the stuff that's like the freebies that are unexpected. And so for me, there's a shot of when we've discovered that she's trading sex for the library. That's the big reveal. There's a shot of her kind of smugly walking down the hallway, and the look that she gives the camera just as she turns the corner is my favorite thing she does.
And it's like when you realize you're kind of in the hands of a master, right? It's like when they're doing things that are not necessarily scripted, but they feel real, they feel justified by the character, and they're just building on it. And then moving forward, you know, you can build that character more and more. I mean, that's when you, I mean, obviously, look, like you said, she has 75 Emmys, so there's a reason she is who she is. But yeah, I mean, she just brought so much to the role. And again, the fact that she was so game was a huge part of it. There's also little trivia nuggets. When we go into her office, you see in the background, there are books that are listed as approved for the library. And these include books called Sperm Suicide, Woman War 3, quote, Take His Balls and Go Home, and quote, Controlling the Male Mind. And that's like, I remember seeing those in the cut, and it was like, sometimes with the props department, just the sort of behind the scenes stuff, there's so much shit going on when a show is shooting. Like, there's so much stuff that has to get approved. And so some of that stuff, when you see props or signs or whatever, I would say like half is written by the writers or someone like the script coordinator or the writer's assistant, and half, like, the props department might just come up with a bunch of stuff, and sometimes you'll just approve it. So in this case, I believe, I could be wrong, but I believe A lot of that stuff was actually written by the props department and then was just selected.
Guys, hey, I just wanted to pop in and talk about this for a sec. You know, before I became a writer on the show, we talked about I was the writer's assistant and I was the script coordinator. And so in that job, I would hear from the art department or props or set deck, you know, what we needed made for the episode. So usually they'd reach out to me when it was a piece of art called out specifically in script. Let's say, for example, we say there's going to be an article about the pit and they needed the copy written for it. Or we have a diagram of how to make a park like the one on the whiteboard in Kaboom. You know, I'd speak with the writer of the episode and sometimes she or he would come up with it. But oftentimes it was me or one of the other writer's assistants. And so in this case, I'm quite confident to say that this was props.
Well, I have a bone to pick with the props department in this episode. In the shrine to Anne, I was like, who is that?
Those are old photos of Rashida. Those are old photos of Rashida. That's another thing that is really funny. Like when you do a show, it's always cute in movies or shows when they ask for those old photos and the actor like sends them in. I'm sure you've done it in the past,
oh,
right?
I have a file.
Yeah.
I literally have a file.
That's interesting.
Because every single show I do, movie, whatever, inevitably, particularly if it's a family thing, they'll probably, hey, do you have any old photos? Yes. My favorite is they always ask you as if they've invented the idea.
Yeah. Do you have high school photos you've used? Like, what have you used in movies? I'm just curious. Like, do you remember?
In the Outsiders on the piano, there's a baby picture of me that they made into a plate.
Wow. Wow. That's a good answer. I mean, that's like very specific.
That's the first one I remember. Yeah. But then you get into the thing of, wait a minute, that's the same baby picture from the Outsiders. So it really shouldn't be in St. Elmo's Fire. And it definitely shouldn't be in 911 Lone Star, because they like you only have
photo.
So many baby photos.
Yeah, well, of course. And we were talking about this, like, you know, there's kids now have way more photos taken of them because people have phones with them. But you know, when we were growing up, not to age us, but when we were growing up, people didn't have iPhones. So there's no iPhone photos of me as a 6-year-old. You know, there's like a few grainy film photos, and that's it. That's all we got.
No, it always makes me laugh. And then a lot of times they don't make it into the movie or the TV show, but it is fun to look back and try to find them. So people listening to this, just next time you're watching a family show, see how many there's Paul Rudd and he's got his, he's skateboarding.
Yeah. And it's
whatever.
It's like him growing up and wherever, Kansas City or whatever. But yeah, if you pause it, you'll see these photos of Anne and it's, you know, Rashida had to like dig up and send in old photos of herself. You're just lucky that it isn't like her with like Eddie Murphy or like someone super famous from the '80s. Cause that was her childhood, right? You have to crop Lionel Richie out and pretend he's somebody else.
The other thing people would do is superimpose your head onto existing photos to make it for a prop. And there are some really bad ones in the background of the West Wing of like Martin Sheen's head superimposed on Bill Clinton's body. And like Bill Clinton has those giant hands and then Martin's head doesn't, it's really funny.
Cause you only have so much you could do with the lighting, right? So it's like bad Photoshops, right? It's so funny. You know, getting back to the story, there's also so many iconic lines in this from Ron to Tammy and just, I think the writers had fun with getting, again, to have a guy be out of character, right? And to get a little bit dirty, like to get a bit dirtier than usual on the show. Like there's the line, what is it like to stare in the eye of Satan's butthole? I mean, that's not generally in the show. That's not generally in the tone of the show. And, you know, the way he even just says Tammy for the first time, it's just unbelievable. It's just like an acting tour de force.
I like, he says, we have something twisted and beautiful.
We have something twisted and beautiful. And then he's like, when we spend time together, it's like doing peyote and sneezing slowly for 5 hours. And then, by the way, he concludes just by saying, that woman really knows her way around a penis. By the way, I love all our Offman impersonations. Yeah, like our,
I know. I could. I think we just need to keep doing Nick impersonation because he's so fun to do. The other thing is you never see Ron weak.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And so he literally says, she has all the power and I am nothing.
Yeah.
And he's, I'm so little.
I'm so little. I'm so little.
I'm so little made me laugh out loud.
He's crying. I mean, like, you just, it's
whimpering. He's whimpering.
Yes, he's whimpering. It's like watching your dad cry, right? It's like watching your dad cry. He's everyone's dad, right? He's everyone's dad. And again, and it's it's compounded by the fact that it's this real life wife, and while we were breaking this episode, it was tricky because with guest star episodes, and you know, you can probably talk about it. You've been a guest star, you've had guest stars on your shows. Yep. There's always a tricky balance of you want to feature them, you know, you want to make sure they're showcased, you have this great comedic talent, Megan's coming in, and you also want to service your main characters, right? So it was a real struggle. I remember breaking the story. You want it to be about Ron and Tammy, they're in the title, but you also need Leslie to be involved. And so that was kind of the balance, and how do you make that happen? I think, you know, the writers ended up doing a pretty good job, which is, you know, having the first scene be between Leslie and Tammy, and then ultimately the culmination, the sort of climax of the episode is Leslie mediating between the two of them, right? She goes in there and she kind of defers to Ron and gives him the strength to do it. And it ultimately ends up being a friendship story between Leslie and Ron, which for my money, those are the best episodes of the show.
Yeah. I didn't know that Pawnee had such a seedy side of town.
When they go to what is that motel?
That motel like, is really seedy. Yeah. It's great. It's like all of a sudden, is this Breaking Bad?
No, I know, right? It's like
and the name of it is great. It's the Grand Capri Hotel.
Yeah, and that's when you know you're shooting in the valley, in the San Fernando Valley.
Yes,
that's like a part of Pawnee that like, are we in like a Wim Wenders movie? It's like, is this Paris, yeah, Texas? Like, what's going on here?
It's funny that location was like bumped both of us because it was like super real.
Yeah, it suddenly got, because like so much of the show is like, you know, it's cartoony and fun and like upbeat and like wholesome, as you said. It's like a Frank Capra movie, and then suddenly,
yeah, it's like Pawnee's a Frank Capra, and then all of a sudden it's like, I didn't know Pawnee had such a big meth problem.
It's got it. Well, then you think about all the other locations. I mean, I don't know, that, yeah, the Glitter Factory, we got the Bulge part of town, we got, yeah, Pawnee ends up being a massive city. They have a lot of districts, but yeah.
So Nick takes down at the end, he refers to the photo on his wall. He says, I'm a simple man. I like dark haired women and breakfast food. One of the great iconic Ron Swanson lines of all time.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Of all time.
And that's one of the, I actually wanted to talk about that. Great. Like, that stock photo is one of the funniest things in the show. It's a stock photo of a woman with breakfast, like just a brown haired woman with like sunny side up eggs.
Wait,
which
so
is
does
in
somebody
the show for
Google?
Years.
Does somebody, somebody Google, and they probably did, dark-haired woman with breakfast
food. That's right. That's right. And the reason, the genesis of all of this, I'm not joking, I believe was just a legal clearance issue. And it's because in the pilot of the entire series, he has a Bobby Knight photo there. And it's a photo, you know, Indiana basketball coach Bobby Knight, legendary, you know, wore the red sweater, etc. And I think, like, legally, for some reason, that didn't get cleared properly. So I think the legal department was like, you can't use that photo anymore. So we had to replace it. And it became, like you said, this sort of character-defining talking head from Ron, where he talks about two things he loves and became things that we kept going back to. Like, think about all the times he talks about bacon or meat in the show. It's like, it's kind of because the Bobby Knight photo wouldn't clear. And so we
had
to replace
amazing.
It with a stock photo. And it still makes me laugh every time I see it.
And it also proves my thing about the young filmmakers, you know, out there, is that when you're stymied doing something or something you think you want to have, it doesn't happen. A lot of times it's the universe giving you a gift.
Yeah.
So you really want Bobby Knight. You're super bummed when you have to pull it out. But it leads to Nick Offerman's obsession with bacon.
Yes, it's him.
Where would you be without that?
It's him saying, you know, give me all the bacon and eggs you have. It's him eating, you know, a breakfast buffet at a strip club. It's him, you know, it's everything. It's all of these moments that are amazing from him.
In Rocky, in one of my favorite movies, you know, in the original script, Rocky and Adrian go on their first date finally, and they go ice skating, and they were meant to go in the script to Rockefeller Center, the big, you know, all the Christmas tree and the big statue, all beautiful, and then they can't afford it, they can't get the location, and all they can get is a literal closed down, not even open to the public, closed down hockey rink. That's what's in the movie, and it's an iconic sad, lonely, lovely scene, but only because they couldn't get what they thought they wanted.
Right, which would have been a cheesier, sort of like more traditional rom-com-y moment. I mean,
yep.
Look, limitations can provide moments of creativity for you, you know, limitations.
For sure.
And there's another classic Swanson talking head in this where he says, On my deathbed, my final wish is to have my ex-wives rush to my side so I can use my dying breath to tell them both to go to hell one last time. And then we cut, and he says, would I get married again? Oh, absolutely. If you don't believe in love, what's the point of living? Like, which is really like, and that's perfect Mike Scully. That's his sort of, we used to call them Scullyisms or Scully jokes, where it's like, it's mm-hmm. such an economy, it's such a reversal, it's such a surprise, and so sometimes we would aspire to write, you know, jokes as succinctly and concisely as Mike Scully, who's one of the best joke writers I've ever met. So
I think uniformly accepted as probably the killer joke writer.
Just a machine. Yeah. Between Scully and Harris, it was like those guys were just joke machines.
What's the deal with Andy's reality series bit in the show?
Oh yeah, we got to talk about
that. Rips up a fish.
We got to. So I remember shooting this. Like I remember this coming up. So yeah, again, a classic misdirect. It's almost like a 40s screwball comedy or something. It's like, yeah, Andy's been working on applying to reality shows like Survivor and Deal or No Deal, and then you cut to him and he's shirtless, like wearing a shirt around his head, and he's ripping the guts out of a fish, and he's like, I'd be a perfect contestant for Deal or No Deal. And that's the joke, right? It's like it's a reversal. But yeah, I wanted to talk about this Andy B story a little bit too, because a couple things, one of which I keep talking about in the show is the secret formula of the show is jobs, parties, and gifts. And in this one, he gets a new job. So he becomes the shoeshine guy at the city hall. And one of the reasons for that was, like, we just wanted to get him into the world. You know, we really loved Pratt and we wanted him around more. And it was like, well, if his job is in the fucking building, like, that's going to help a lot. So we just put him in the building. But I also wanted to just go through, because sometimes it makes me laugh how many jobs each of these characters has over the course of the show. So just a really quick rundown. So this is, look, we know, so just let's go through some of the jobs Andy Dwyer had over the course of the show. We have, of course, vocalist and guitarist of Mouse Rat / Scarecrow
yes,
Boat
of course.
/ Nothing Rhymes with Orange, Nothing Rhymes with Orange, etc. Shoeshine stand guy. That's the job he gets in this one. Mm-hmm. Assistant to Leslie Knope. So he later becomes Leslie's assistant, right? That's then assistant to Leslie Knope during her city council campaign / security guard. So he's also a security person. Then also weekend security guard at Pawnee City Hall. That he gets that job at some point. Then also assistant to the Sweetums Foundation's charity work when he becomes an assistant to Ben at the charity foundation for Sweetums. He's also the lead actor in a TV show, Johnny Karate's Super Awesome Musical Explosion show. So he also has that job. So it's like he gets a new job every like three episodes. Like there's so many jobs, and I think I'm forgetting some as well. I think at one point he might be Ron's assistant. I mean, like it's. But that was one of the story moves we did, which is like you don't really even deal with it in the show. It's like. In this case, like he's by the shoeshine stand. You had some interactions with him at the shoeshine stand, I remember, and like when you came into the show, and so that was kind of fun, right? It allowed him to interact with other characters.
I just read this weekend, TV Line or one of those things did a poll of fake TV shows that we wish were real TV shows. And Johnny Karate's Super Explosion or whatever it is was, I think, number three.
Yeah.
Like people really want that show. What would that show? Just give me, you're a writer, you're a professional. Just can you quickly beat out the pilot?
We did an episode of that show, essentially, like over the course of Parks. I think, by the way, speaking of his jobs, he would appear on his own show in character as other people. So I think in the Johnny Karate pilot, he should also appear as Burt Macklin, which I didn't mention. He should also appear as Andy Radical, the possum tamer. So he also should appear as that. He should also appear as himself, and he should also appear as Mouse Rat. So he should appear. It would essentially be a Clump situation, a Nutty Professor Eddie Murphy in the Clumps
yes.
situation where Andy has to appear seven times and just do wardrobe changes off screen and come back in. So I think it's that kind of episode for him.
I want that badly. this big Brandanowitz B story. We got some big Brandanowitz going on. By the way, look, you got stipulated. You guys are genius writers. You're the best writers who were ever on, whoever created comedy. It's you guys. I got to tell you, there's never been more of a straw man story in the history of television than who should and choose.
He don't stand a chance. He don't stand a chance. And there's also, he goes to Tom for advice, a guy who's essentially never got on a date. But then Tom actually gives him good advice. He's like, he tells him to take the high road and like be a nice guy. And then of course there's a talking head where Tom was like, oh yeah, I always told people to take the high road because I want more room on the low road. he mimes driving a truck on the low road or whatever. But it is funny too, because I think this was about the point in time where it was after we realized this, but like everyone just loved Pratt so much on the show that there's literally a scene where like Andy is leaving and Donna's like, I like Andy. Like she likes Andy now. So it's starting that run where like Donna is into Andy, where she says, Andy. Like that's really like, I don't know, just made me laugh when I saw it, because I forgot about that element of the show where like she's kind of into Andy, which is like very funny. So
yeah.
There's also a little nod to something which crosses the A and B stories over and the end of the A story, where, you know, they say, you know, this is why you never get back together with your ex. And obviously it's referring to Ron and Tammy in the A story. But the astute viewer will also realize maybe there's some connection to the B story where Anne is trying to decide, you know, between, in some ways, between Brendanowitz and Pratt. And you know, I think sometimes with these shows, when you have A stories, B stories, C stories, you like to do something called dovetailing, which, you know, we didn't do heavily in Parks and Rec, but you'll see it in a show like Seinfeld, where every plot crosses over with every other plot. Like, think about that Seinfeld episode where the marine biologist, where, you know, Costanza goes up and jumps onto the top of the whale and pulls out a golf ball from the whale's blowhole, which Kramer had been hitting earlier. That's my example of dovetailing. But, you know, it's kind of a satisfying thing where you know, the stories cross over. And so, you know, this was kind of more of a thematic dovetailing, and we would sometimes talk about that happening in the show. But on Parks, it was usually pretty light. You know, sometimes it would happen, but we weren't trying to do it every episode like they definitely do on like Curb or Seinfeld or shows like that.
Well said.
Dunkin' cold coffee can be brewed at home in your Keurig coffee maker with Dunkin' cold K-Cup pods. Just brew it hot over ice and enjoy flavor that's crafted to serve cold. The home with Dunkin' is where you want to be.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at the coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at tmobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at tmobile.com.
I think we should do a town hall, don't you think?
Let's do a town hall, or as we call them when they're voicemails, a town howl.
Oh, hit it.
Yes, this is John in Kentucky, and I just wondered if you could expand on the Lerpus family. I heard some rumors about Herman Lerpus being a failed chemist and wondered if you had some backstory on that. Thanks for bringing all this to us, man. We love it. It's like being there again. Peace.
Now, hold on a second. Now, wait a minute. So, John from Kentucky, thank you for the town hall, first of all. Are we sure that he didn't act in the show as Herman Lerpus? Because are we sure that John from Kentucky is not the actor who played Herman Lerpus? Because that is kind of what Herman Lerpus sounded like. I mean, a great question. Also,
I think that was Herman
yeah
Lerpus.
I mean, it does,
I don't think there's anybody in Kentucky with
it,
that
it
name.
It does sound like it, but wonderful voicemail, really gave me maybe the biggest laugh of my day. Loved it. Also, he asked if there was a rumor Herman Lerpus was a chemist in the past.
I think he's a chemist.
I mean, I don't know where he's getting that information. I love that. I don't know if that's on the Parks and Rec Reddit or what, but so basically So the Lerpus family, this is, again, it all comes back to legal name clearance, Rob. Like, we go back to the lawyers. So say you come up with the name Ron Swanson. You then have to submit it to legal, and they run it through a phalanx of lawyers, and they try to clear it and make sure that you can use it in the show.
But it's a mathematical formula the lawyers have come up with.
Exactly. So Mike, very early on, he came up with the last, I believe he came up with the last name Lerpis, which is spelled L-E-R-P-I-S-S. And the good thing about the name Lerpis is I think it's a made-up name that no one has. So at that point, you can do anything. And so it became so tempting to just keep using this last name because you know it's going to clear. And on top of that, it's a silly name. So I will very quickly go through all the people named Lerpis on the show. There's a Herman Lerpis. There's a Bjorn Lerpis, played by Mike Mitchell from Doughboys. There's Dennis Lerpis, played by Jason Schwartzman. There's Kurt Lerpis, played by Dave King, one of the writers. There's Lalissa Lerpis. There's Karen Lerpis-Gretzky, hyphenated. There's Jaquiz Upon Gretzky Lerpis, all hyphenated. And there's Rachel Lerpis. So it basically became this family of people named Lerpis in the town. So when you watch these episodes, keep an eye out in the credits of who is in the Lerpis family, because in our minds, our backstory, our headcanon was there is just a family of people named Lerpis in Pawnee, and that's why there's so many of them in the show.
And they're clearly Irish Catholic.
That's the backstory.
This is our time in Pawnee is up, but there's more next week. Am I wrong about that or am I right?
There's
right.
More. Can't wait to come back next week and talk about another episode. And of course, thanks to producer Schulte and producer Greg. And don't forget to subscribe, like, rate, and review. It really means a lot to us. Me and Rob personally do it for us. Thank you. Bye for Pawnee.
Bye-bye.
This episode of Parks and Recollection is produced by Greg Levine and me, Rob Schulte. Our coordinating producer is Lisa Berm. The podcast is executive produced by Alan Yang for Alan Yang Productions, Rob Lowe for Low Profile, Jeff Ross, Adam Sachs, and Joanna Solitaroff at Team Coco, and Colin Anderson at Stitcher. Gina Batista, Paula Davis, and Britt Kahn are our talent bookers. The theme song is by Mouse Rat, a.k.a. Mark Rivers, with additional tracks composed by John Danek. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time on Parks and Recollection.
This has been a Team Coco production in association with Stitcher.
Hey, Keurig coffee drinkers. Did you know that the bold, smooth taste of Dunkin' cold coffee can be brewed in your Keurig coffee maker and enjoyed at home? Dunkin's cold K-Cup pods were crafted to be brewed hot and enjoyed cold. And of course, they're packed with the Dunkin' flavor you crave. Brew over ice and sip in seconds. Because the home with Dunkin' is where you want to be.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at a coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.